following interviews and commentaries are for entertainment only. The views and opinions expressed therein are those of the individual speakers and callers and do not necessarily represent the views of KFAR Radio or any of our respective employees, affiliates, or sponsors of this program.
It's time again for Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio with the latest news and conversation related to firearms and your Second Amendment rights. Sponsored by Rogers Auto Repair, Arctic RV, Auto Trim Design, and Frontier Outfitters. And now, Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio.
Welcome, listeners. This is Shooter's Corner with Laura Berkowitz, KFAR Radio. Call in throughout the hour to join us. 458-8255, 458-TALK. What is on your mind about firearms today? It looks like snow outside. Pretty soon, the temperature is 10 degrees this morning, and Melissa is expertly running the board as she does every Shooter's Corner. Thank you, Melissa, and she's keeping the archives up to date. So if you miss a program, you can find it in the archives within about 24, 48 hours. What is on our agenda today? I want to provide updates on ammunition and reloading gun-related classes in Fairbanks. Second, I'll tell you about an article for future discussion on women and holsters. Third, our main topic will be the Michigan-Oxford High School shooting. And we should give serious thought not only to what happened, but how the prosecutors are handling it. Fourth, I have information from a Gunsmith magazine article on fixes for the Smith & Wesson victory. Fifth, we can talk about military animals and Winnie the Pooh and Winnie and Pooh. Just a fun discussion and not in all that order. And I may not get to everything today. I'll finish it next week if I don't. Now, last week I mentioned that I received the December issue of Gun Tests magazine. And I said there were two topics I wanted to talk about this week. The first was their review of several historic rifles, whether they considered them important additions to your collection. And the second was the Gun Test magazine choices for the 2021 Guns of the Year. And I need to put those two conversations off until either December 22nd or the first part of January. As I read the articles, I realized I need to do more research on their descriptions and findings. So I'll be back with those presentations soon, and I'll let you know in advance. Glenn Miller will be back in town mid-January, and as soon as he acclimates back into our Fairbanks winter, I'm sure he'll want to do another Glenn Miller Reloading Bench program on Shooter's Corner. I'm hoping Glenn will call in today to provide an update on his East Coast travels, shooting USPSA matches, and his January 29 NRA Metallic Reloading class. And that reloading class is Saturday, January 29, 2022, so first class of the new year. And here's a story about someone who did not take Glenn's reloading class. It's my understanding a new shooter in our Bring What You Got matches had a squib load at the last match, and he mentioned to the RSO that he had just started reloading ammunition. So goodness, folks, don't be that squib load guy. Take Glenn Miller's NRA Metallic Reloading class and learn how to safely reload. For those of you who might not know what a squib load is, let me explain. There are three main types of ammunition malfunctions, and you might run across these malfunctions with factory-bought ammunition, but it's more highly likely that you'll experience them with hand-loaded ammunition. So first is the misfire, and a misfire is the failure of a cartridge to ignite when the primer or case rim has been struck by the firing pin. And a misfire is caused by a defect in the cartridge or a defect in the pistol that causes a weak firing pin strike. And second is the hang fire. A hang fire is a perceptible delay in the ignition of a cartridge after the primer or the case rim has been struck by the firing pin. Now, a hang fire is usually caused by contact with water, solvents, and lubricants that cause damage to the powder. And that perceptible delay can last several seconds. And it's just a several second delay before the bullet leaves the case to travel down the barrel. And that's why we teach that if you pull the trigger on a loaded gun and the gun goes click instead of bang, then hold the barrel downrange for 30 seconds before opening your gun to see what the problem is. If you think you have a misfire and open your gun the second it doesn't fire, what happens if you really have a hang fire? And that would be awful because that cartridge could go off while you're opening your gun. A hang fire is just a delay in the ignition. So if you pull the trigger and get a click and no bang, hold that barrel downrange 30 seconds before opening your gun. And the third is the squib load. And that is what I just said happened at the match the other day. And if you notice anything unusual when you fire your shot, like a reduction in noise or a reduction in or no muzzle flash or less felt recoil, then stop immediately what you're doing. Do not take the next shot because you may have a bullet stuck in your barrel. And a squib load is caused when the case either has no powder in it at all or not enough powder to ignite and send the bullet out through the barrel completely at high speed. And this can happen with factory ammunition too. We had this happen with a 22 caliber in our youth program. And our kids are trained what to do if a squib load happens, but it is more likely to happen with hand-loaded ammunition. And of course, if you have a squib load and you send another round into the barrel right behind the one lodged in your barrel, you will likely blow up your barrel or at least put a nice bulge in it and you will not be able to use that gun. And you might well send shrapnel back into your face too. So with the incident at the Bring What You Got match, the RSO was able to use a squib rod, which can be a wood dowel or a steel rod, and he used it to push the stuck bullet back out the barrel. And if they couldn't have gotten that bullet out, that gun would have had to go to the gunsmith. So don't be that squib load guy or gal. Take Glenn Miller's upcoming metallic reloading class on Saturday, January 29. And you can sign up online at aimcom.org, aimcom.org. Take the link for registration and scroll down that page until you find Glenn's class. Or you can call Glenn at 907-347-1396. And I mentioned a few weeks ago that this time of year you may want to give a gift certificate to one of Glenn's NRA reloading classes. Just call Glenn and he'll make arrangements with you to issue one or more gift certificates. And a shout out to fathers and grandfathers. Take this class with your kids and grandkids. They only have to be 16 years or older to take Glenn's class. And Glenn's phone number again is 907-347-1396. And his email is glenn.miller@aimcom.org. So give that ability to keep on shooting to your family. If they know how to reload, they will always have enough ammunition for their needs. Now, another reminder I want to talk about is to check Chuck Indereeden's website for upcoming classes that he teaches. His website is c4traininggroup.com, and his courses and dates are listed under the course calendar. Chuck has an Alaska Concealed Carry Handgun Permit class this weekend, December 11 and 12, and he has just a few spaces left. And folks, I highly recommend you take Chuck's Concealed Handgun class. You're taking a class from a person whose career is law enforcement. And Chuck is a dynamic instructor. He's a dynamic presenter, and you could not get a better education. Chuck has a Defensive Handgun Level 1 class coming up in February 26, 2022, and it's already half full, so don't wait to sign up. This weekend for his concealed carry class, December 11 and 12, and then that Defensive Level 1 Handgun class, February 26. And don't worry about the approximate round count for this Defensive Handgun class of 350 rounds. Talk to Chuck and he'll have a way for you to have enough ammunition for the class. And Chuck can put together custom classes for you, your family, and your friends. And along those lines, there's an article from Fox News. It's titled California Follow Home Robbers Wore Police Type Gear While Forcing Victims Inside at Gunpoint, video shows. And here's a quote from that article. As the trend of follow home robberies continues in Los Angeles, police are investigating surveillance video showing alleged thieves clad in police type gear attacking a group of victims outside a home before forcing them inside, unquote. So how long do you think it will take before criminals here in Alaska try this? It's a trend. Are you prepared to deal with multiple assailants? Are you trained to deal with multiple assailants? And Chuck Indereeden has the experience to train you for dealing with multiple bad guys coming at you at once. And he also has the training to help you prepare your house and your business to make entry less appealing to criminals, as well as to train to help you develop personal awareness techniques that can help you not fall a victim to follow home robberies. So again, Chuck's website is c4traininggroup.com, and I highly recommend his classes. We're going to go to a break.
The blessings of this great country of ours, the list is long, yet freedom is chief among them. Freedom to live your life for you and your family. Freedom to keep and bear arms. Freedom to travel without unreasonable restriction. Arctic RV helps their customers exercise their personal freedoms on the road, exploring and camping in beautiful Alaska. Although Arctic RV is closed for the season, they will reopen Monday, April 4th. Arctic RV, rough it in style. See you this spring.
Nothing says I care about your safety quite like a gift from Auto Trim Design. Winter is a dangerous place in Alaska, full of wandering animals, dark days, cold nights, and slippery roads. Auto Trim Design helps protect you and your vehicle from those bumps in the night. Get your loved ones gifts they'll use every day, like moose lights, a remote start with drone mobile, heated seats, or a good old-fashioned gift certificate. Stop by Auto Trim Design today at 2550 South Cushman.
Weather brought to you by GCR. Drop by the Tire Guys for free tire inflation. Tire pressure is key to safety, fuel economy, and long tire life. GCR Tires and Service, taming the Alaskan road, Van Horn at Cushman.
KFAR Weather.
A winter weather advisory begins at noon tomorrow and continues until noon Saturday. 9 above today, under partly cloudy skies, east winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Chance of snow tonight or above. 1 to 3 inches of snow tomorrow through Saturday night. And that's your weather on KFAR, 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Laura Lockwood. Currently, it's 1 degree below zero.
And now, back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM and 660 AM. Streaming live at KFARradio.com.
This is Shooter's Corner with Laura Berkowitz, KFAR Radio. Please call in 458-8255. 458-TALK, and let us know what's on your mind about firearms today. So let's talk about the Michigan Oxford High School shooting on Tuesday, November 30th. And I think that shooting and the way it's being handled aggressively by law enforcement should be a conversation for many of us. It's still too early to know what the outcome will be. And I think there are important questions we should be asking ourselves about these types of incidents going forward. And unfortunately, I believe school shootings will likely happen again in the future.
We have a caller.
Oh, we have a caller. All right, caller, you are on the line.
Hello, Laura and Melissa. This is Glenn.
Hi, Glenn. How are you?
Oh, just fabulous.
We were just talking about you.
Okay. I heard that, and thank you very much for promoting my classes. I appreciate that.
Well, they're great classes. The feedback is wonderful, and I think they're important. It's really important. That squiblo didn't need to happen, I think, if that person had taken your class.
Well, hopefully not. Yeah, I do see quite a bit of that. That's probably one of the most common errors that we see in reloading is improper powder charges, and I see that at matches too, where competitors have bullets stuck in their barrels, and at best it's a real inconvenience. At worst, obviously, it ruins a barrel or a gun, or maybe even worse, an injury. So, yeah, it's important to keep that from happening. But So, thank you for promoting that class. And one thing that I wanted to mention is, I've been trying to include more advanced techniques in the class that we teach.
Mm-hmm.
And I realize that there's just only so much time to do that. So I've kind of abandoned the idea of trying to include these advanced things. And I'm developing an advanced reloading class just for those that either already have extensive reloading experience or that have taken the basic reloading class that we offer. So I'm hoping to have that available sometime this spring, summer. So those that are interested in maybe taking an advanced class, they'll either need to, complete the basic class or have extensive reloading experience before they can attend. But looking forward to to do with that.
Oh, that sounds like a wonderful idea, and make sure I know about it, and I will tell all of our listeners, and you will too, because you're going to be doing your reloading bench program again soon, right, when you get into town?
Yeah. When I come back to town, I'd be glad to come into the studio as long as Melissa has it warm enough in there for me.
Well, I don't know. It depends on what warm enough is and if you ever decide to leave the warmer weather where you're at.
Well, it's in the low 80s here, so, you know, something similar would be
good. Brag.
Yeah, well, for the listeners who don't know, Melissa and I are kind of bundled up. We can't even open the shades on the windows because the cold air comes in and we'd be freezing. Mm-hmm. We wouldn't even be able to talk. It's pretty cold in the studio.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that, but I do have one other thing I'd like to say for the listeners, just in case anybody's interested in this, but I just learned that the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms is projected to start accepting electronic Form 4s, and these are the transfer paperwork that's needed to transfer things like suppressors, machine guns, short-barrel rifles, short-barrel shotguns, shortly after December 15th, but they're saying before Christmas, and this is a complete Form 4 process that allows you to submit your fingerprints, your application, your photographs, and pay for your $200 tax stamp online.
Oh.
And besides that advantage with, you know, just a one-stop shop, what they're claiming is they're going to significantly reduce the transfer time. Right now we're looking at anywhere from 8-9 months, maybe up to 14 months. Electronically, they're saying by the end of 2022, they should have that down to 90 days, which
wow.
is significant.
Yes. This is good news.
So, yeah, just so if anybody's interested in transferring a NFA item, you know, required to do so on a Form 4, look for that on ATF's site. On their e-form section of their site, you do have to log in and create an account, but it's a much easier way to track it, to submit it, and hopefully get your transfer back quickly.
Great. Thank you for sharing this news.
All right, Laura, all right. You guys stay warm up there, and we'll see you in the middle of January. Have a good Christmas.
You too. Both
Thanks
you and
for
your
calling,
wife.
Glenn.
Yeah, thank you. Bye.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
Bye. Okay, so we're talking about the Oxford High School shooting. And I said that, unfortunately, I do believe that these types of shootings will continue to happen in the future. And I'm thinking about situations where the shooters are young enough where they're still in the custody of their parents or living with other adults. So what's legal responsibility do parents have? And what is the legal responsibility for school officials in a school shooting like the one at Oxford High School? Now, I've read a number of articles, and not all the information in the articles is consistent. And it's early to understand the full story of what happened leading to the shooting incident. But in my memory, this is the first time that parents are facing charges, perhaps involuntary manslaughter, according to the articles. And I don't know enough about Michigan law to know if that would stick. But maybe they'll face civil lawsuits from the families of those killed or injured in the shooting. And there's talk in the media about school officials bearing partial responsibility because of the way they handled the situation. And from my reading, the week before the shooting, Crumbly's teacher noticed he was searching for ammunition on his cell phone during class, and she reported this to the superintendent. The school authorities contacted Crumbly's mother by both phone and email, but she never responded, from what I read. And we're told the mother exchanged text messages with her son, at that time the future shooter, about that incident, searching for ammunition on his cell phone. And Fox News article from December 3rd titled Michigan School Shooting, Ethan Crumbly's Parents Facing Involuntary Manslaughter Charges, reports that the mother's response to her son via text message was, quote, lots of laughs, I'm not mad at you, you have to learn not to get caught, unquote. So as the timeline goes, according to that article, the morning of the shooting, Crumbly's teacher was alarmed by a note on his desk, and that note contained drawings of a semi-auto handgun, a bullet, that was their words, I don't know if it was a cartridge or a bullet, and a person being shot twice. And it contained phrases, quote, The thoughts won't stop. Help me. Blood everywhere. My life is useless. The world is dead. Unquote. And after that note with the drawings was found by the teacher, Crumbly and his parents were what the article terms immediately summoned to a meeting at the school. And the parents were told they were required to get their son into counseling within 48 hours. And apparently at the meeting, the parents were shown the drawing and the writings. But by that time, Crumbly had scratched out parts of it, including the drawing of the gun and the bloody figure. And here's a quote from the article. She, who is Karen McDonald, the Oakland County prosecutor, noted that parents resisted the idea of their son leaving school at the time and departed the building without him. He then returned to the classroom and hours later drew the weapon from his backpack and started firing, prosecutors allege. Then, when news of the shooting became public, Jennifer Crumbly, which is the mother, texted her son at 1:22 p.m., "Ethan, don't do it." And 15 minutes later, James Crumbly, the father, called 911 to report a gun missing from his house and that he believed his son might be the shooter, unquote. Now, another Fox News article titled, "Oxford School Officials Could Be Charged in Deadly Michigan Shooting," gives an update. And this explains a letter by Oxford Community School Superintendent Tim Thorne that he sent to the school community. And here's the quote. It's rather long. The letter explained that on the day of the shooting, school leaders met with Crumbly and his parents following a teacher seeing violent drawings made by Crumbly. Crumbly, however, convinced the school that the drawings were for a video game, and he was ultimately sent back to class. On the morning of November 30th, a teacher observed concerning drawings and written statements that have been detailed in media reports, which the teacher reported to school counselors and the dean of students. The student was immediately removed from the classroom and brought to the guidance counselor's office, where he claimed the drawing was part of a video game he was designing and informed counselors that he planned to pursue video game design as a career, the letter states. At no time did counselors believe the student might harm others based on his behavior, responses, demeanor, which appeared calm. In addition, despite media reports whether or not the gun was in his backpack, has not been confirmed by law enforcement to our knowledge, nor by investigation at this time, the letter continued. The letter added that Crumbly's parents were told to take their son home that day, but they flatly refused and left without their son, apparently to return to work. The school also reportedly told the parents they had 48 hours to find counseling for their son, or the school would contact Child Protective Services. That's the end of that quote. And it turns out that the gun used was a Sig Sauer 9mm that was purchased by the father on November 26th. Apparently, at the time school officials talked with Crumbly's parents, they were not aware, the school officials were not aware the family had just a week before purchased the firearm. And one last quote from that article reiterating what the school superintendent wrote to the community, quote, "While we understand this decision has caused anger, confusion, and prompted understandable questioning, the counselors made a judgment based on their professional training and clinical experience and did not have all the facts we now know. Our counselors are deeply committed, longstanding school members who have dedicated their lives to supporting students and addressing student mental health and behavioral issues," unquote. And the article also mentions that a third party will investigate how Crumbly interacted with the school employees and peers. And we're going to go, we're not going to go to break. We have a minute. Okay, so I have two questions for our Shooter's Corner listeners. We only have 2 clocks in here. we need more clocks so I know what time it is. Okay, so I have 2 questions. First, we know that the shooter will be prosecuted. What responsibility do the parents have in this situation? They purchased the gun, and they supposedly left it where their son could access it. And they knew from discussions with school officials that their son was presenting with what could be considered dangerous behavior. And from what I've read so far, the parents did not take any action to follow up on suggestions or requirements by school administrators on that particular day. We do not know the young shooter's history at school, if he's been cited for behavior problems in the past, And of course, we don't know what this young shooter's home life was like. How was he raised? And what his sense of right and wrong is. And we don't know to what extent he may suffer from mental illness. And if he does, how long have his parents known about the situation? And second, as for the school administrators being held legally responsible, what do you think of that? And I'm asking our listeners, what do you think of that? Perhaps school administrators should have had the child taken into custody when the parents declined to remove him from the school during the parent administrators meeting. And we're going to go to break now, and I will continue this around the corner.
Your calls, your opinions. It's Problem Corner, weekdays from 11 to noon on KFAR.
Fox News, I'm Rich Dennison. President Biden today taking part in a two-day virtual summit with more than 100 world leaders.
On global democracy.
Democracy doesn't happen by accident. We have to renew it with each generation.
The president said that renewal is urgent, that there's evidence, both at home and overseas, of democracy and freedoms being eroded.
Fox's Simon Owen in London. A day of tributes to former Kansas Republican senator, presidential candidate, and World War II veteran Bob Dole as he lies in state at the U.S. Capitol building. President Biden among those reflecting on Dole's life serving the country.
America has lost one of our greatest patriots. We may follow his wisdom, I hope, and his timeless truth.
Dole died over the weekend at the age of 98. America's listening to Fox News.
It's time for your Alaska News Minute.
KTVF Channel 11 reports that last night, the Fairbanks North Star Borough School Board voted 4-3 to reverse the mask requirement in district buildings. The requirement was put in place in September following a spike in cases at the beginning of the 2021-22 school year. The board heard public testimony from 24 community members, 13 in favor of a mask requirement and 11 opposed. Those in favor of the requirement testified about the current public health emergency and the lack of contact tracing being done by the school district. Those opposed argued against the effectiveness of masks and in favor of parents' right to decide for their children. Board members Matthew Sampson, Jennifer Luke, April Smith, and Maggie Matheson voted with the majority. Shira Sanderson, Aaron Moradi, and Tim Doran voted to maintain the mask requirement. After hearing public testimony, the board held discussion about the issue. School Board Vice President April Smith said, "It is time to free families from the mandate," adding, "Personal mask responsibility is the clear, equitable option. It is our job to provide an education. It is a parent's job to decide if what we are providing is safe and act accordingly." The change will go into effect on January 3rd.
Streaming live online at KFAR660.com.
Nothing says I care about your safety quite like a gift from Auto Trim Design. Winter is a dangerous place in Alaska, full of wandering animals, dark days, cold nights, and slippery roads. Auto Trim Design helps protect you and your vehicle from those bumps in the night. Get your loved ones gifts they'll use every day, like Moose Lights, a remote start with Drone Mobile, heated seats, or a good old-fashioned gift certificate. Stop by Auto Trim Design today at 2550 South Cushman.
Fall and winter in Alaska bring new sporting opportunities. Grouse, ptarmigan, and other small game hunting. Snowshoeing and winter camping. Predator calling and trapping. Gear up with Frontier Outfitters and prepare to succeed. Traps, snares, and calls. Guns and ammunition. Stay warm and dry with the right clothing. Rest easy with tents, sleeping bags, and camp necessities. ATV and snow machine accessories are just downstairs at Century Hardware. Alaska is new every season. And for every season, there's Frontier Outfitters for your Alaskan lifestyle.
Ride into winter with a friend, your Snowway Snowplow. Snowway plows are stronger, smarter, the most reliable plow in the industry. Their wireless controls eliminate messy dash installations and provide the ultimate in-cab flexibility. Better yet, Snowway's patented down-pressure hydraulics increase your plowing efficiency by 30%. The drive-in mount system hooks up in seconds, and their structural plow warranty is the best in the business. Stop by Rogers Auto Repair, your Snowway dealer on Dale Road near the airport, or call 479-6665.
And now, back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM and 660 AM. Streaming live at KFARradio.com.
This is Shooter's Corner with Laura Berkowitz, KFAR Radio. Please call in 458-8255-458-TALK and let us know what's on your mind about firearms today. And we are talking about the Oxford School shooting incident in Michigan. And if you have any comments on that, call in. We're just in the process of talking about the parents' responsibilities and the school administrators' responsibilities. What legal responsibilities did they have? And I'll pick up with, should the school administrators have called law enforcement, informing them of behavior relating to the searching for ammunition on a cell phone or drawing a disturbing picture that this kid did? Should law enforcement have been asked to be present on the school grounds until this young man was dealt with? Could the school administration even do that? What are the rules? What are the laws? And we don't know what legal authority the administrators or school counselors in Michigan or in that school district had in that situation. And we don't know what prior behavior problems, if any, the school shooter has had in school. I'm sure that will come out here in the news, but we don't know at this point. Was he under any type of counseling, psychiatric care? Or had he been prescribed behavior-modifying medications? Did the school administrators, if he was, did the school administrators know this? And all this will come out in the investigation. We just don't know enough now to pass judgment. But what I think we should think about now and discuss over time is exactly what the legal responsibility of parents and school counselors and of school administrators in general is in a situation like this. At what point can they demand removal of a student, and for what cause? Should school officials have searched Crumbly's locker, his coat pockets, his backpack? On that day, they may well have found the young man carrying a firearm. And if they don't search and an incident happened, should parents, school counselors, and school administrators be prosecuted? If the circle of responsibility is widened, will that help mitigate future school shootings by students? And I don't know that in Michigan, parents or adults in general are responsible for the misuse of a firearm by an unauthorized person. We'd have to check the statutes for that. If parents leave their car keys on a kitchen table and their child, underage for a driver's license, takes those keys and the car and kills someone while driving illegally, are the parents responsible? In the incident in Michigan, that might scream a mental health problem for the young shooter. And we know from our statistics discussion, specifically the Guns and Control book by Guy Smith, that in general, if one doesn't treat the mental illness, just taking a firearm away will not keep someone from hurting themselves or others. And remember the discussion we had some months ago about the term substitution of means? That was in relation to using a firearm to commit suicide. Is there any correlation with having a firearm in the house being a cause agent for committing suicide? And Smith's finding is that there is no correlation because one can use what he termed a substitution of means. If one cannot commit suicide by one method, they will choose another. And we looked at worldwide statistics to prove this, as well as per capita gun ownership in relation to suicide rates. And countries with low per capita gun ownership have a much higher suicide rate than, for instance, our country with a relatively high per capita gun ownership rate. So people substitute another means, be it hanging, jumping from windows, or poison. So in terms of mass killing, getting back to the mass shootings, we recently had someone in Waukesha, Wisconsin, drive their car through a parade. And a gun wasn't used as a deadly means to kill people, but a vehicle was. If Crumley in Michigan did not have access to his parents' gun, could he have driven a vehicle through the playground or school crossing or used some other means? Many 15-year-olds know how to drive, or they think they do, and some have taken driver's ed just before they turn 16. I never got around to discussing Guy Smith's chapter on mass public shootings, but I should do that in the near future. If the child has mental health issues, what resources are available to parents? What funding is available or programs are available by the state? Can school administrators make a case that because a child was seen searching ammunition on their cell phone or drawing disturbed pictures, that they would cause a mass shooting incident at the school? And I'm throwing all these out because I don't know the answers. These are all things I think we have to think about and think of a path forward. Monday at our youth program, one young man was telling me about some of the guns he shoots, and he talked about how much he liked historic guns and the one historic gun he was researching now. And you'd better believe he researches these guns and ammunition for these guns on the internet. And he is a highly responsible young man, a good shooter, safe with his guns. He shoots matches with us, and I would never think there would be a problem. So we can't correlate an interest in guns and ammunition by a young person to a future mass shooter. So is the blame on the parents, the school administrator, or school administrators, or the state legislature for not providing ironclad legal alternatives to prevent a mass shooting incident? And if you think sending the child home with his parents that day might have prevented the mass shooting that day, how would that action have prevented the kid from conducting his mass shooting another day? Even if he had been expelled from school, it could still happen. Even if the parents did not purchase a gun or keep one in the house, clearly their kid had fantasies of shooting people. Would he have stolen a gun, looked for opportunities to steal a gun, and carry out his action? If Crumbly's action boils down to mental illness, and what can we do that will prevent any and all mass shootings without limiting all of our firearms rights? So people on both sides of the issue have been discussing this for years, and I'm just curious if any of you, our Shooter's Corner listeners, have any ideas or comments about this situation. So let's talk about military animals. After that discussion about the school shooting, this is a little lighter weight. How many different animals were used by militaries over the ages, and what were they used for? Now, many of these animals could be trained to some extent and used in warfare, various types of combat or as working animals. Horses, elephants, moose, and camels have been used for both transportation and mounted attack. Pigeons were used for communication and photographic image espionage. Now, we know, of course, how dogs are used today. They're employed in a variety of military purposes, including guarding and bomb detection. Dolphins and sea lions are being trained for military purposes. Those moose were really Eurasian elk, and they were used in Sweden to draw sleighs of royal couriers back in the 1600s. And there was some attempt to create a moose cavalry, but unfortunately, or fortunately for the Eurasian elk, the elk were too fearful to be ridden into battle and were frightened of the sound of gunfire. Now, the horse was most widely used for warfare throughout history. And did you know that a knight's war horse was trained to bite and kick? And in modern times, with our long-range weapons and motorized vehicles, we don't use horses extensively, but they're still valuable, along with mules, when militaries need to cover difficult terrain. We don't consider elephants domesticatable, but they are trainable, and they can be mounted for transportation, and they can be used to move heavy loads. And recorded history tells us that elephants were used as far back as 1100 BC. Elephants were used in World War II by both the Japanese and the Allies. They could do work where machines couldn't go. Camels have long been employed by militaries in war and arid regions. And yes, there have been camel cavalries. Camels were used in both World War I and World War II. Mules have been extensively used by the U.S. Army and the British Army, as well as the Indian Army during World War II to transport supplies and equipment over difficult terrain. And mules are patient pack animals. They're very hardy, and they can carry heavy loads of supplies, and they can carry it in terrain that is difficult for horses. Oxen have been used as beasts of burden. They've helped transport artillery through difficult terrain. And dogs have a long history with warfare. The ancient Greeks and then the Roman Empire used dogs in combat. And the Romans trained the Molossian dogs, it's Canis Molossus, for battle. And these dogs were fashioned with protective spiked collars, metal collars, and mail armor, and they would attack in formation. And some years ago, I had a Tibetan Mastiff, and they have molasses blood behind them, and that was an experience, that dog. And she would probably have drooled the enemy to death. The Spanish conquistadors used a dog called an alant, or a Spanish alano, to kill warriors in the Caribbean, Mexico, and Peru. And these dogs traveled with the Spanish explorers, and they were used as war dogs. And Mastiffs and Great Danes were used in England during the Middle Ages. And these were, of course, large dogs, and I read they could scare horses to throw off their riders. And then they would pounce on the knights to disable them so that their masters could more easily attack and kill the opposing knight. And I had two Great Danes, and both were very mellow, and about all they would attack is a pillow. Now, Ramsay II in Egypt, Ramsay II, he is said to have had a pet lion who fought with him. We have, a break. Okay, I'm so interested in the animals. We are going to break, and I'll finish up around the corner.
The blessings of this great country of ours, the list is long, yet freedom is chief among them. Freedom to live your life for you and your family. Freedom to keep and bear arms. Freedom to travel without unreasonable restriction. Arctic RV helps their customers exercise their personal freedoms on the road, exploring and camping in beautiful Alaska. Although Arctic RV is closed for the season, they will reopen Monday, April 4th. Arctic RV, rough it in style. See you this spring.
Nothing says I care about your safety quite like a gift from Auto Trim Design. Winter is a dangerous place in Alaska, full of wandering animals, dark days, cold nights, and slippery roads. Auto Trim Design helps protect you and your vehicle from those bumps in the night. Get your loved ones gifts they'll use every day, like Moose Lights, a remote start with Drone Mobile, heated seats, or a good old-fashioned gift certificate. Stop by Auto Trim Design today at 2550 South Cushman.
Weather on Cafe R, brought to you by the all-new Rat Pack Cigar on Old Airport Road near Fred Meyer West. For quality cigars, even a tasting room. Over 100 varieties. Rat Pack Cigar.
KFAR Weather.
A winter weather advisory begins at noon tomorrow and continues until noon Saturday. 9 above today, under partly cloudy skies, east winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Chance of snow tonight or above. 1 to 3 inches of snow tomorrow through Saturday night. And that's your weather on KFAR, 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Laura Lockwood. Currently, it's 1 degree below zero.
And now, back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM and 660 AM. Streaming live at KFARradio.com.
This is Shooter's Corner with Laura Berkowitz, KFAR Radio. Please call in at 458-8255-458-TALK and let us know what's on your mind about firearms today. And we have a call. You are on the air, caller.
Is that me, Laura?
Yes, you are.
You're there. Hold on. Let me check your Facebook. Okay. You got surprised.
Okay, you're on.
There, yeah.
Okay, you were listening to the commercial.
Yeah, he had to turn down the radio. I appreciate that. You don't know how many times I'm like, can you just turn down your radio, please?
Well, anyway, you were talking about military animals, and it triggered a story that I thought might be interesting for
yes,
you.
Yes, yes.
I served back in the Vietnam era in the mid-60s,
yeah.
And there was a tremendous use of dogs.
Yes.
And I was stationed at the base that had the Sentry Dog Training Unit for the Air Force.
Mm-hmm.
And so we would, in my office information, we would go over and watch the demonstrations that they put on periodically for the young kids.
Uh-huh.
Well, anyway, in the course of this thing, they had a dog return from Southeast Asia a big silver black German Shepherd, and he had been shot through the head. Well, not through the head, but in the head area, and it took out his canine teeth.
Oh.
So anyway, they had a full battery of medical people for the dogs. It was almost like a hospital.
Yeah.
And so we had a dentist there that had a, I suppose, a unique sense of humor. And he replaced those canine teeth. And he replaced them with stainless steel.
Oh, goodness. Oh, that was great. Did that dog go back into duty?
No, he was retired. But we did run his picture in the Base newspaper.
Oh, I think that's awesome. Great. That's great.
He was probably one of the most fearsome domestic animals I have ever seen.
Well, I thank that dog for his service to our country.
Can you imagine running up on that dog and seeing like these stainless steel teeth? Like, oh my God.
It would definitely put the fear into you.
Yeah.
Have a nice day.
Thank you for calling. Bye-bye. Okay, bye.
We have another caller.
Okay, caller, you are on the air.
Hey.
Yeah.
This is Bubba calling.
Yes.
Back in the mid-80s, I was out at Galena.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, they got a lot of dog mushing going on out there.
Yeah.
They had Babe the Beagle, the security police had out there, was their in-residence dog, the drug dog. Because anytime they tried to put a drug dog on an airplane, word got out. There was never any surprises.
Yes.
So, in any event, so here this SP is walking around with his dog, and the dog, a little beagle out there at 40 below. So he came to me, and he had Native women downtown make booties for him.
Uh-huh.
But then he came to me and he says, you know, could you make a toboggan or something? I could put this dog in so I could take it from building to building. So I did that. Not a problem. And then the next thing you know, one of my mushroom Native friends, he saw this SP pulling this Babe beagle around. He says, man, you white folks screw up anything. Don't dog hold hands. True story.
That is great. That's great. You so much for that.
You take care.
Thank you so much. Okay.
He's not wrong.
That was great. Yeah. Oh, so getting back to this, I had said Pliny the Elder. And I didn't talk about Pliny the Elder yet. We just talked about Ramsay the Second and his pet lion who fought with him. So Pliny the Elder was a Roman writer. He was a Navy and Army commander. That was a great story. Thank you, Bubba. Early in the Roman Empire, and he used pigs. And here's a quote. As he relates it, elephants became scared by the squeal of a pig and would panic, bringing disaster to any soldiers who stood in their path of flight, unquote. Now, war elephants were trained and guided by humans for combat, and they were used to charge the enemy, break their ranks, and instill terror and fear. And from Wikipedia, quote, elephantry is a term for specific military units using elephant-mounted troops. In India, they had elephant swords that were blades in a curved shape, and the blades were attached to a tubular piece that fit on the elephant tusks. And I think that must have been like an elephant bayonet. And sadly, I have to report some animals were used as living bombs, having incendiary devices attached to them. And I'm not going to go into that because it's just too sad. But den animals have been used to conceal explosives. The British Special Operations Executive in World War II used this method against Germany. They got dead rats, or maybe they killed the rats, and filled them with plastic explosives and left them in places like factories where one might see a dead rat and not think much about it. And it was hoped the workers would pick up the dead rats and throw them or shovel them into the furnace. And that would cause the furnace to explode because the puncture of a high-pressure boiler would create a pretty devastating boiler explosion. Now, on a cheerier note, homing pigeons have carried messages since medieval times and were still used in World War I and World War II. And, of course, The military had military mascots, and these were animals associated with military units that act as emblems or pets and took part in ceremonies, and they were not used directly in warfare. Australians had kangaroos. A few of the Australian military mascots were dingoes, a blue heeler, a Sumatran tiger, and a peregrine falcon. And the Canadian military adopted mascots, that goes back to the British military tradition. And one mascot the British had in Canada back in the 1840s was a bear. And the modern Canadian Army actually had a live polar bear named Juno after their anthropomorphic polar bear named Juno. And the live Juno, the real bear, lived at the Toronto Zoo. And Juno the polar bear was an honorary private in the Canadian Army before being promoted to an honorary corporal on his first birthday, and then later he was made a master corporal. And apparently the British military are fond of goats, and over the years many goats have become mascots. So here's what I hope I have time to finish. The story about Winnie the Pooh and Winnie and Pooh, and if I don't get finished, I'll finish it up next week. So this is the real story of Winnie the Pooh. At the outbreak of World War I in 1914, a Lieutenant Harry Colburn from a Canadian cavalry regiment volunteered his services, and while traveling to report to the Canadian Army Veterinary Corps, he purchased a young bear cub for $20 at a train stop. And the bear's mother was probably killed when the cub was very young and could most easily have become socialized to humans. And the name of the hunter who sold the bear and who presumably provided the bear's early socialization is not documented. Colburn named the bear Winnipeg, Winnie for short, after his home city of Winnipeg, Manitoba. And Winnie accompanied him all the way to England, becoming the mascot of the Canadian Army Veterinary Corps. And before leaving for France, Colburn left Winnie at the London Zoo, and she was supposed to have gone to Winnipeg, but Colburn decided to allow Winnie to remain at the London Zoo because she was very much loved there. And among her fans was A.A. Milne's son, Christopher Robin, who consequently changed the name of his own teddy bear from Edward Bear to Winnie the Pooh, providing the inspiration for his father's stories about Winnie the Pooh starting in 1926. And what does this have to do with guns? Well, the United Kingdom had to deal with hostility across the English Channel since the Napoleonic Wars. And Hitler knew that Britain was not prepared for artillery fire across the English Channel. And Hitler saw this as an opportunity to put long-range heavy artillery on the French coast in anticipation of his planned invasion of Britain. And he called this operation Operation Sea Lion. And Hitler's heavy artillery was to both protect his invasion forces from the Royal Navy and to bombard the British from across the Channel. And Hitler installed big guns, including turreted naval guns, in giant concrete casemates on the French coast. On the morning of August 12, 1940, a German shell exploded over Dover, and it damaged four houses. And that would be the first of thousands more shells the Germans would fire into the coastal town of Dover over the next 4 years. And so after Churchill's speech, "We shall fight on the beaches," he had to fix the problem that the British military had no heavy coastal guns to defend Dover. So the British got to work. And Winnie and Pooh were two large heavy coastal emplacements defending the beach at Dover. Winnie was named after Winston Churchill and located behind the village of St. Margaret's at Cliff, northeast of Dover. And Pooh was situated to the east of St. Margaret. And Winnie fired the first shell to cross from England to France on August 22, 1940. And the objective was to target one of the German gun batteries on the French coast. Unfortunately, Winnie and Pooh were not all that accurate. And that is worth the Smartest Person in the Room award, because now you know about Winnie the Pooh and Winnie and Pooh. And if you want to read the whole story of the bombardment between the Germans and the British across the English Channel, which is quite a story, Google the article "Big Guns Named Winnie and Pooh Dueled Nazi Cannons Across the English Channel." And the article has very good illustrations of the gun placements. So I just have a few more minutes here. Espionage was another career for animals. During World War I, pigeon photography was introduced. It was not very successful, but in the 1970s, the CIA used the pigeon camera, and that mission's details are still classified. And I'm going to wrap up now. I'll talk to you all next week, and I just want to finish next week just a few things, and I'll talk to you about the acoustic kitty. We don't want to forget him. Have a great weekend, and I'll talk to you all next Thursday.
This has been Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio, brought to you by Rogers Auto Repair, Arctic RV, Auto Trim Design, and Frontier Outfitters. To listen back to this or past episodes of Shooter's Corner, go to KFARradio.com and click on the archives page. For more Shooter's Corner on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.